Welcome to On Deadline, a deep dive into a single topic from Odyssey's newsrooms across the country. For those of you keeping score, we are 3 weeks away from a government shutdown. So today, we're going to talk about that. How we keep ending up here and what the stakes are for both sides. We all know by now that Republicans currently control the White House, the House, and the Senate. So, on one hand, it seems like it should be easy to pass the spending priorities they envision. But, as Politico noted, Democrats are warning there will be a funding lapse if Republicans don't negotiate with them. And they're floating concessions Republicans could make in exchange for support across the aisle. That includes making a deal by the end of the year to head off the expiration of enhanced health insurance subsidies that would result in premium hikes come January for millions of Americans. Senator John Kennedy, a Louisiana Republican and senior appropriator, put the odds of a shutdown at 50-50, perhaps higher. Here's more on what's going on from KCBS Radio in the Bay Area.
The U.S. government will run out of money in the coming weeks, and there are calls for Democrats to force a government shutdown in order to bring attention to the shredding of the social safety net. For more on this, KCBS political analyst Mark Sandalo. And Mark, these things have happened before, but the problem is always who gets blamed for them, and the electorate doesn't often like that.
Yeah, this is something that 6 months ago, this was a big fight between the left in the Democratic Party and I guess you'd call them the centrists. The left said Trump has gone so far overboard in all that he's done. We have to use whatever weapon we have, and that weapon would be approving a budget. And while Democrats don't have a majority in either the House or the Senate, they do have the filibuster ability in the Senate. So they could refuse to approve the budget, which would cause a government shutdown. 6 months ago, the argument was, if you shut down the government, it means the courts won't operate, and there'll be nobody to stop Donald Trump. And a shutdown, almost by definition, is an emergency. Trump has using emergency powers to, you know, fire 10-20% of the federal government with Elon Musk and Doge, and they didn't want to empower that. So now it comes up again. And, you know, Ezra Klein, who is a Californian who has quite some sway, a columnist and a podcaster for the Democratic Party, wrote a massive opinion piece in the New York Times over the weekend saying, the situation has changed. Democrats must stand up. This Trump is running the government like a mafia organization, and Democrats must shut it down. The question then becomes, to what end? The problem still persists. A government shutdown, as you point out, Eric, it's about who gets blamed for it and what can Democrats get out of it. The one thing that's clear is that in a game of negotiations like this, you want to convince the other side that you're willing to drive the car off the cliff so that they will negotiate. And Democrats are, at least some of them at this point, saying, yeah, that car, if you guys don't come to the table and work with us, it's going right off the cliff.
Yeah, what is different this time around, though? I mean, what's different? I don't get it.
Yeah, so this is where I think that the fight is in the Democratic Party. You look at polls and those sort of things, and they suggest the Democratic Party is extraordinarily weak right now. And the reason for that is Democrats don't think that their own party is fighting. If nothing else, this would show signs of fight. And, you know, what it accomplishes, it's a media thing. It's something where you can put all the attention on what the Democrats say. They can point to cuts in Medicaid and Medicare. They can talk about the ICE raids that are getting rid of people who have been in this country for many years. The question is the public on their side on this? And speaking of crazy, the other side, the Trump side, has no problem with this. Just in the last hour, Trump reposted something to Truth Social, which it's an AI-generated Nancy Pelosi, which clearly is not her. It's profanity-laden Nancy Pelosi speaking about how she can't get any insider information anymore, about how Paul Pelosi is in love with this guy who attacked him with a hammer. It is so out of the bounds of anything any of us would have considered civilized political discourse. I think it's pretty clear that Democrats understand that Republicans are willing to at least carry through with their threat of driving part of the government off the cliff. And the question now is how they respond.
Here's the Mark Cox Show in St. Louis with why some conservatives don't like the budget as it stands either.
We got Ryan Schmelz from Fox News Radio with us this morning with more on that. Good morning to you, Ryan. How are you?
Hey, Mark, how are you?
I'm doing good. We were just talking about the testimony yesterday by the Epstein victims and how that's maybe playing in the background of what's now going to be a budget battle for the next couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, well, I don't know so much if that's going to be playing in the background. It might be in the forefront.
It could be. All the drama building toward a vote on a CR. You know, you've got a number of Republicans who don't want to vote on that because, correct me if I'm wrong, but the continuing resolution they would be voting on is not, it's not a Donald Trump or Republican budget. Am I correct about that?
Yeah, for the most part, it's not. You know, this was a budget that was negotiated by Speaker Johnson when he had a very slim House majority, and he was pretty much having to negotiate with the Biden White House and Leader Schumer, who was in charge of the Senate at the time. And, you know, there were a lot of conservatives who didn't like the final product, but, you know, Speaker Johnson was in a very tough situation. And, you know, they pretty much continued this funding last December. Then they extended it in March all the way until now.
Right.
And so, yes, this in many ways would be a continuation of a budget that was signed into law by President Biden. Now, keep in mind, though, there have been some amendments to it when it comes to military and whatnot. So there are some conservative priorities that were added later on. But at the same time, I think that the argument is that this is still very much not exactly President Trump's funding priorities. There's also the argument to be made that funding the government this way, where you are just continuing a previous budget, you know, is not exactly a DOGE-friendly way of doing things, because you're funding programs that in some cases don't exist anymore, are outdated, and that kind of pushes back on maybe some of the DOGE efforts that are going on right now.
And you get so tired of the threat, right? Every cycle we hear, the government's going to shut down, the government's going to shut down. Do you think there's really any chance of us getting to that stage again? And if so, you know, are the Republicans willing to let it go a while?
Yeah, I mean, look, Speaker Johnson has avoided this several times since he's been Speaker. You know, we've come very close, but he's found his way out of it. And, you know, I could see a scenario where it happens again, but there are some different factors you got to watch for. Number one, you know, what's the conservative wing of his party going to do? What's the moderate wing going to do? And also, you know, are Democrats going to be willing to play ball? Because Leader Schumer is under a lot of pressure right now with how he handles this situation. And so he could be in a tough position to negotiate, or might not even be willing to negotiate. That's kind of what we're waiting to see. Right?
How do we keep ending up here? Tommy Tucker at WWL Radio in New Orleans takes on that question.
Smith, you're up to the Inverse New Hampshire Survey Center. How you doing, Andy?
I'm doing great.
Tell me about what's going on with the budget.
Well, the budget's going to run out of money. We're going to hit our debt limit, and we're going to go through the same sort of dance that we've gone through before, and you and I have talked about, that use this as leverage to try to get political gains in other areas, and then eventually they will pass a piece of legislation that's loaded down with goodies for both sides' favorite friends, and we'll go on to the next one of these crises.
And all the while decry the deficit and the debt and how it's terrible and something's got to be done, right?
Yeah, and this time it might be the case that something could be done. Not that necessarily is good, but something could be done. Because usually it's the president's party that wins in these sorts of battles. Mm-hmm. The president has the bully pulpit. The president is actually spending the money, and they can decide what they're going to close down to make people hurt out in the public. The party that usually wants to reduce spending usually loses these battles. But I don't see which party wants to reduce spending right now. But it may be the time when both parties can get together and say, get rid of this whole idea of this debt limit, which certainly hasn't done anything to keep our debt down. So to get rid of this kind of false idea of the debt limit and just go on like almost every other country in the world does and just pass a budget and spend it.
So, in other words, let's admit it. Let's be honest that we're just going to spend as much as they give us, or more, actually. So let's just keep spending, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I agree with everything you said except the let's be honest part.
Yeah, there you go. That's true. I lost my head there. Let's talk about Social Security. Is anybody addressing that at all?
Not so much, but it's something that that will happen. It's actually kind of a similar set of processes that are going to go there. I think both parties are kind of lining up to see how they can benefit from putting in a scare on Social Security. You've certainly been seeing it in the, I've been seeing it on the news and the press, in my email feeds, because I'm unfortunately turning that age right about now. Where Social Security becomes a possibility. But it's in legislation that when they officially run out of money, and I put air quotes or run out of money because they of their trust fund will disappear, which never really was there, but on paper it will disappear, that they have to start making cuts. And when that happens, you know, there the cuts will go in automatically, which is a trick that Congress likes to put in on itself to constrain itself. They just happen to the cuts are things that the bad things will happen automatically, and they can wash their hands of that problem. But they'll deal with something. Unfortunately, they could have been dealing with this 15 years ago, 20 years ago. This was everybody knew this was eventually going to come. With some minor tinkering, now they're going to have to do some more major tinkering to make it come to deal with it, or basically rewrite the legislation that's underneath Social Security, which I don't think they have the time or the political will to do.
I can't imagine an elected official actually being in office and saying, okay, we're cutting your Social Security 35%. I can't imagine that happening. You?
You remember the last time they kind of did this, tinkered with this a bit? Dan Morozinkowski was chairman of Ways and Means, and he had elderly citizens beating on his car on the streets of Chicago. There's a reason I tell my students why the Congress doesn't really address the issues that are important to young people, but they do address the issues that are old important to old people, because the old people vote.
And there's more of them now than they did then.
Yes, there are, and they will get out and vote on this, especially in the midterm. So this is, I think what we're seeing with the ramping up of Social Security is fun for the midterms.
So it's either, when it comes to Social Security, it's either mid-years or a big election. Nobody is going to say they're the ones that's going to cut Social Security. So tell me how you see this story ending. Do they just print more money? Can the government do that? I don't know.
The problem is that the way Social Security was created was that it was an insurance program, and it theoretically did like an insurance program where somebody takes your money and invests it, and they know how many people are going to be born and die and how much money comes in, and they have a revenue stream that can be paid out with this. And they're supposed to invest the money, and the money that's invested builds up additional monies, and that allows them to continue to pay this thing off. Well, of course, that money that they were supposed to invest never was invested. It was just basically swapped on the ledger sheets from one side of the government to the other side of the government. And it's gone out. It's run out. So they can't just print more money to do this, because the underlying legislation says that the money that they must cut spending on benefits if the trust fund, again air quotes, that the trust fund runs out of money. So they're going to have to do something to deal with that sort of legislative problem there, as well as the financial problem. So
I want to get more into this trust fund, if we can, Andy, because people think the trust fund has been raided. You say it's on paper only. Was there ever money in it? I don't understand the way that was all set up. Al Gore, back during the presidential campaign against Bush, this goes back a long way, said that he would veto any plan that takes money out of Social Security and uses it for any other purchase. That means Gore would have to veto his own plan because, again, paying down the debt is not reserving funds for Social Security. Now, if then-Vice President Al Gore can be confused about this, what hope does a simpleton like me have of understanding this, Andy?
Well, he probably understood it, but he was trying to confuse other people.
Ah, I got you.
So really what it is the lockbox that Gore talked about never really existed. Social Security is allowed to invest money, but it's only allowed to invest its money in U.S. T-bills, which is U.S. debt. And those aren't doing so well recently. But as far as raiding the lockbox, as people say, unfortunately, since the 1960s, there really hasn't even been a lockbox, other than the fiction of it being on paper within the budget. It hasn't been there at all. It's been part of the general revenue stream. So we've been paying as a pay-as-you-go basis for Social Security for decades, or half a century.
Robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Exactly. Taking money out of your right pocket and put it in your left.
Right. Okay.
And with a little bit of part of it gone in the transfer from right to left. So it's been going on for a long time.
You got to go wet the beak a little bit, right?
Well, you know, everybody needs to get fed.
Exactly.
It's been a fiction that we've all known. People in Congress have known this for years. Nobody wants to touch it because every time it gets touched, somebody loses. I think you mentioned with Gore, when he was running against Bush, Bush wanted to privatize Social Security, allow you to invest your money into, say, the stock market or something like that. But that was decried as being risky and advantageous to the bankers and the Wall Street brokers. But, well, at least you might have had some money, because I think your 401k has done a whole lot better than the money that was in the lockbox. Mm-hmm. This has been a political problem that nobody wants to fix. And the longer it goes on, the harder and harder it is to fix. So now people will start to feel the pain in about 2028 or something like that. The fun will really begin.
We can't be the only ones who don't even want to think about Social Security running out of money. But what about the $37.25 trillion federal debt that continues to grow? What's the plan for that? Trump's Republicans hold a 219-212 majority in the House of Representatives and a 53-47 edge in the Senate. Though that chamber's rules require 60 votes to pass most bills, meaning that 7 Democrats have to support a funding bill. Chuck Schumer faced outrage from some in his party in March after providing the votes that kept the government funded. He argued at the time that allowing a government shutdown would have been more damaging than going across the aisle. The Democrats' full position on spending expectations has not yet been defined, which has us wondering, where's the common ground they can find? Here's Tommy Tucker with more on the looming shutdown.
The sense of Washington, D.C. vu as it relates to the government shutdown, continuing resolution, budget, etc. Todd Belt joins us now. Todd Belt, professor and director of the Political Management Program at George Washington University.
You know, what the government has to do is pass 12 bills generally by October 1st. And that's regular order of doing business. But you know, last time they did that, that was 1997. So here we are again, kicking the can down the road a little bit and using the little tricks they have. Which are the omnibus bill, which, you know, combines different bills, and the continuing resolution, which literally kicks the can down the road until they can figure out what they want to do.
Yeah, you know, it seems as though you could make a case that government has gotten, is going to probably sound so stupid in its simplicity, but so much more political and so much dysfunctional since then, right? Since 1997, and I don't see anything changing in the future, do you?
Yeah, well, most political scientists put the rise in partisanship at the late 1980s, early 1990s, and since that time, it's been much more difficult to broker any sort of compromise. And since the early 2000s, there hasn't been any overlap between the most conservative Democrat and the most liberal Republican. They've really gone to their respective camps, and that means brokering compromises a lot difficult. And we've also seen a stronger influence of the leadership of the House and Senate of the parties over the rank and file members, making it more difficult for the members to co-sponsor legislation and making it difficult on them if they vote with the other party. So there's been a lot more of the keeping people in line within their own party, which again makes it difficult to broker compromise unless it comes from the people at the top. So it's up to them to decide if they want to fight or if they don't.
It seems like people are beginning to think that it's a winner-take-all government when it's not, because, well, I don't know what the percentages of Republicans or Democrats break down, but there are a lot of people in the country who still live here, who still pay taxes, who have a voice in how the country's run or should have a voice in how it's run and how their tax dollars are paid, right?
Well, of course, and those are our representatives, but the thing is that the representatives also represent the people who have elected them. And, you know, we've seen, you know, the polarization at the top as well as, you know, with common people. You know,
but I'm saying voters. It seems like on both sides, they should realize that And again, I'm not trying to be Pollyanna-ish here, but the Democrats should realize, well, you know, they still got Republicans here that have a right in how things should be said. And the Republicans should realize, well, they still got Democrats that are not the enemy. They're just somebody down the street that has a different idea on how the government should be run. Talk about the healthcare portion of this, because you got, and that really is, man, roosts in Louisiana, because you got Scalise and you got Mike Johnson and you got Cassidy and you got a lot of conservative Republicans that are going to hurt the state if they don't vote to continue this health care tax credit. And the problem is, when you talk about Obama health care tax credit and you link it to COVID, it becomes politicized. And what gets lost in all of that is that a lot of people that are willing to buy health insurance, forget the mandate, they're willing to buy it if it's affordable, right?
That's right. And those Obamacare or Affordable Care Act, depending on how you want to call it, those subsidies expire at the end of this calendar year on December 31st. And if you remember, there were a number of Republican senators who were really concerned about the effect of the Medicaid cuts on their states and that they were going to be, you know, had some of them had threatened to vote against it. People like Susan Collins and Josh Hawley had threatened to vote against Trump's big, beautiful bill because of that. And the Democrats see an opportunity to try to get these tax credits back in. Now, because they don't expire until December 30th, the continuing resolution needs to be passed by the end of this month, because October 1st is the beginning of the fiscal year. But they're still going to need to negotiate the long-term budget. The Democrats see an opportunity if they can get because the Republicans need 60 votes in the Senate to get both passed, both the continuing resolution and the regular budgets. The Democrats see this as an opportunity where the Republicans might be weak on this issue and they can try to force the issue. And of course, you know, it starts at the top, and you have Hakeem Jeffries, who really tried to play hardball last March on this with the Republicans in the House, only to be kind of thrown under the bus by Chuck Schumer when he changed his mind right before the vote.
Yeah, tell me through that. What was the context for that? I don't understand what Schumer was doing.
Yeah, Schumer said he had a change of heart because he thought that if they shut down the government, that would give more authority to, remember, Doge was going crazy on shutting things down and firing people. And he thought that that would give more authority to Donald Trump to be able to do that. And it actually does. When the government is shut down, the head of the Office of Management and Budget, who is Russ Vought, who is no friend to large government, and Donald Trump have ability to determine which agencies stay open, which are considered critical and which are not. And he thought that that would make things worse. But of course, he got a lot of pushback from members of his party who are really looking for some leadership after they've lost the House, the Senate, and don't have the presidency. And there's a real power vacuum right now on the Democratic side.
So when it comes to, you know, again, it used to be back in the days of Allen Ellender and Hale Boggs. Louisiana had a lot of stroke. That's why we have the Saints here, the football team. It seems as though we have the president's ear. But yet, Mike Johnson, Speaker of the House, Steve Scalise, the majority leader, is Bill Cassidy quiet on this thing with the Medicaid retraction, if you will, or however you want to call it, deduction or cuts, which would lead to 92,000 plus people being uninsured in Louisiana? I'm trying to understand the politics of this, Professor, because I know somebody personally who told me that their house was being foreclosed upon, okay, and that the reason was because the insurance went up, the economy was so bad. But then, moments later, went on to praise President Trump and his handling of the economy. And I am not saying that President Trump was the reason her house was foreclosed, but just the disconnect that goes on where people that support President Trump kind of do it. And this goes back to Johnson and Scalise and so forth, even though they're kind of hosing themselves in the process.
Yeah, well, Donald Trump holds a tremendous amount of power, and we know that the members of Congress do not like to be in his crosshairs, and if they are, it really shuts down the work that they can get done, or they get tons of complaints from their constituents, and it really, you know, slows their office down. And they don't like the fact that if Donald Trump puts them in their crosshairs, it's harder for them to not just work, but also, you know, get reelected. There's a couple of members of the House who are going to be running for higher office, Chip Roy for Attorney General in Texas, Ralph Norman for governor of South Carolina, and they have crossed the president on some occasions, but now they're going to need his support because the president is incredibly popular. The Republican Party has really been taken over by Donald Trump, and those voters are his voters, and he can signal to those voters who he wants to support. And because of the power that he has over the coalition that elects members to House and Senate, he has a tremendous amount of power in terms of negotiating with them. And, you know, we saw what happened to Victoria Sparks when she decided to cross him last March. He really went off on her and was able to strong arm her into voting for his bill.
How do you see this playing out? Do they shut the government down?
Well, yeah. Well, we've got two deadlines here. We've got the end of the month, and I think they'll get a continuing resolution. And it looks like that they will push that off until just before Thanksgiving. So not everything has to be negotiated right now. There's going to be some time for cooler heads to prevail, and the Democrats will have some opportunity to try to get some things into that bill that they want just prior to when the continuing resolution would expire by Thanksgiving. So
for the 92,000,
we're not out of the park. Yeah.
So for the 92,000 people here in Louisiana who are wondering if they'll be able to afford health insurance or not, they just have to wait and stay tuned.
Wait and stay tuned. Yeah, that's what I have to say.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.